So thank you, Wolf, and thank you, EBA, for inviting me to both contribute to the report and also to give this presentation today, and for you for being present, of course. No poverty in livestock. Ulf's mentioned we've got millions of people across the world that live and work with animals. That's very different from the kind of societies we sit in OECD countries. In those situations, every animal has value. Every product that these animals produce, be it manure, milk, draft power, has value. And each animal is valued as an investment, as a way to raise immediate cash, and as a way to change a lifestyle. Now, what do these people actually look like? I spent time this week trawling through my photos. So it could be a woman in the high Andes with her sheep. It can be an Egyptian with their buffalo. It can be a Kenyan with his small dairy herd in Nairobi. It could be a small boy in Cuba looking after the family bull. It might be a man ploughing in Bangladesh, their rice paddy, or it could be a woman with her children having a donkey carry their possessions around the world. It could be the Maasai Mara, where obviously livestock are critical in terms of the survival of those people, or a boy in the, again, the high Andes in Bolivia, and it could be a man with sheep. And of course, given the fact that we've got Women's Day, gender is important, and we know that poultry are primarily the domain in many places of women. Now, when we think about that from a context of animal health for me underpins everything that we do in livestock production. So small changes of animal health status can change the market value of an animal. The presence of a cyst in a meat product will actually lower its value. The appearance of a disease can create variability in production, and we all know that smallholder farmers tend to be risk-averse. Chronic diseases that are constantly present actually rob families of their income, and an epidemic disease like avian influenza can kill and ruin a family's investment. And finally, the most important thing from this from a poverty angle is that animal disease can actually halt a means of moving up the ladder out of poverty. For us, good animal health creates stability. It encourages confidence to invest in better animal production practices. So the very thing that Ulf has just mentioned, how do we move people up that scale in terms of productivity issues? Animal health underpins that process. So again, what do we need to do in this sense? Helping people understand basic things like how to measure heart rate in sheep, castrating animals that are not needed for breeding, testing for animals that might have parasitic diseases. This animal is being tested for cysticercosis, a parasitic disease that lies in the muscles. Vaccinating against blood parasite diseases like East Coast fever. Maintaining cold chains. If we don't have good cold chains, we can't deliver good vaccines, we can't deliver good medicines. Biosecurity, spraying vehicles as the end to big farm systems. Vaccinating chickens against Newcastle disease, something that we know gives a good return across the world. And inspecting meat to make sure that if it does have problems, it doesn't enter the food system. And of course, Sweden has contributed to this process, vaccinating against avian influenza. And I noticed that two of your staff are not here because of influenza, so that's an economic impact.
It's not Abe. It's Paul.
Now, my work in South America with Andrew Dorward thought about how we move up these steps. How do we get poor people into medium status, into rich status? And my interest is, how do we use livestock to actually maintain the status? And also, how do we use livestock to help people move up status? Now, that transition is eased by people having animals. It's also eased by people having access to employment in that process. And decent work and economic growth, livestock and animal health, are very much linked. Livestock require inputs. They also require output markets. Within those structures of inputs and outputs, there's much movement, transport, processing of animals and their products. And every animal and unit of production generates some kind of economic activity and employment. Now, in my experience in different parts of the world, if we have poor animal disease status, then we don't have investment in that input and output chain. And that means that we have problems in terms of actually managing and encouraging livestock sector growth. There are great examples where countries like Brazil and Thailand have invested heavily in their animal health status, and that has allowed investment in these systems. Again, what does that look like? It could be an Egyptian man who's busy preparing eggs for production of day-old chicks. Women carrying eggs to the market, a Bangladeshi man selling those eggs, not those eggs, but some eggs in Dhaka. A Vietnamese man carrying his pig to the market. Women in Cambodia selling chickens, individual sales of chickens, something that we wouldn't even consider doing here, of course. A cattle market in the valley regions of Bolivia. A slaughterhouse in Kenya. People preparing chickens that have been slaughtered in the Chinese Lao border. And a woman preparing charqui, dried meat from llamas in the high Andes. Now, why do I emphasize this food system part? Well, we've done work in Nairobi that shows how complex these systems are. This was led by Pablo Alacon, the field work. And this is what we revealed in terms of the complexity of the movement of animals into Nairobi and then on into consumers. Every step of this has people involved. Every step involves economic activity. And we know from our experiences in developed countries that this part of the system employs about 7%, in the UK, should I say, employs about 12% of all people in our economy. It represents about 7% of our GDP. So this is a critical part of the livestock system. Getting the health right at the top is absolutely critical. We know that if we get it wrong, so mad cow disease being a great example, then things go wrong through that system. And our aim of this system is to improve human nutrition and satisfy demand of the consumers. The consumers are the big part of this piece. So we can focus on the producers, but we mustn't forget that we're actually satisfying the demands of the consumers. Everybody's a consumer. Ulf mentioned that malnutrition is problematic in sub-Saharan Africa. We all know that. We've got high prevalence of stunting in different places, which impacts on the health and cognitive development. And overall, we know that there are negative consequences on society. A recent study in India indicates that that has actually dropped the level of GDP growth simply by not feeding people well enough at an early stage. Now, the causes of that malnutrition and how we deal with it are well recognised. What is less recognised is actually the role of livestock in that process. Again, we've done work in that Nairobi study where we've got some kind of positive relationship between female livestock ownership and the height to weight measurements of children. And we've also recognised from previous studies that there is a good relationship between better nutrition and animal ownership in the rural populations. What we would say here is animal ownership and access to animal source foods is important for individual and societal development, and ensuring these animals are actually healthy actually underpins food access. Now, within that picture, we mustn't forget that things are changing. Africa's changing very, very quickly. Asia's already well on its way. One of the things we recognise is this rural to urban migration. And with that, we will have a change of food system from a localised system to a more nationalised system. The next step in many of these places is a true urbanisation of people. So this generation here still have a footprint in the rural areas. Their children and their grandchildren will become like our children and our grandchildren. They will be truly urbanised. They will become divorced from that rural space. They will be very reliant on an agri-food system that is very distant. And actually managing animals in this rural space, making sure they're healthy, is absolutely critical. Developing structures around that becomes more and more critical as the days go by. So what do those things look like? It could be a very rustic type of meat market, again in Bolivia, or quite sophisticated systems of collecting milk in Kenya and putting it into plastic bottles after being pasteurized. Preparation of birds in Cambodia. And again, cooking of those animals for sale. Points of selling on the roadside in Tanzania. Selling meat and then cooking it in Nairobi. Or a man buying his duck in a plastic bag in Laos. Or Joshua Nonu, who did a PhD with me from Nairobi. This is us enjoying our life in Abuja just after seeing another PhD student eating meat in that area. But we mustn't forget that our target in this has to be children. The first 1,000 days, obviously maternal nutrition and early nutrition, absolutely critical in terms of us solving some of those hidden hunger problems of stunting and actually making sure that these people have a future, both their own future and the future of the society as a whole. Animal source foods play an important role in that process. So our key messages here are livestock are all around us. I'm wearing livestock. I ate eggs this morning and bacon, so I don't see those animals anymore, but I know that they're present. But in the lives of the rural people in our poor countries, they're absolutely critical on a day-by-day basis. They provide an activity to maintain livelihoods and help people climb out of poverty. They generate economic activity and employment across our very complex livestock sector food systems. And they provide high-quality nutrition, hopefully to the people who need it most. Now, all this can work better and improve if we have good animal health. If we have poor animal health, then we've got problems. And I would say quite simply, our animals' health is our health. If we don't deal with that and manage that, then we've got problems. How do we achieve that? Education is critical, not just of our professionals, but also of our livestock farmers, particularly in terms of literacy. We need to improve our communication channels, our technology routes to those farmers to make sure they have the best possible available at an affordable price. The markets for their products need to be well managed, and we need to make sure that our food systems actually provide high-quality nutrition at affordable prices to people in the most vulnerable place. So our recommendations in the report are 3. We do feel there's a need to assess efficiency. At the moment, we're in a situation where we have the global burden of human disease, the global burden of foodborne disease, but we do not yet have a global burden of animal disease. So prioritising things across the animal health space is not that great, and that's something I think that needs to be addressed. Now, Sweden is well placed to contribute to this process. It's well known for its work on surveillance and prevention and control of livestock diseases. It's one of the countries that is highlighted in terms of its management of antimicrobials as well in that process. Efficient delivery and public-private partnerships. Many countries that I've worked in lack an animal health delivery system that actually reflects the increasing development of the livestock sector. Concerns exist on management of emerging disease, antimicrobial use, antimicrobial resistance, and it really calls for innovative methods of efficient delivery and the need to explore public-private partnerships. Again, Sweden could be seen as a role model. It combines very low use of antimicrobials in the livestock sector with high productivity and good animal welfare. Now, when people say that's not possible, I think we shouldn't be saying that. Everything's possible if we have the right mindset. If we want good outcomes, we have to use our animals better across the world. They're so important in terms of what they do and what they impact on. And finally, building human capacity. Many countries have problems in developing a cadre of people, animal health professionals and livestock owners that actually reflect the demands of the livestock systems that we have at the moment. And we need capacity in the education system to improve the strength and the depth of the people working in the animal health systems. That kind of fixed cost investment is something we've done in Europe for maybe 150 years. It's only starting to emerge in some of our poorer countries, and it's only starting to emerge in some of our very big economies. So this is actually critical. Again, Sweden is very well placed in terms of education and training capacity in the areas of animal health and production. And, of course, it's very well linked with low-income countries in Africa and Asia. I just want to finish by acknowledging Betty Bisdorf, who's helped in the initial part of this work in terms of getting the literature together, and also for the organisations who've shown their understanding and letting me have time and also have time to put this together. And I want to finish with a message that I use quite often. I believe that we should have one health systems that are orientated to livestock food systems, and in that process we'll be helping people, protecting people and working with people. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for a very... and you almost kept your time. I think some of us overran before. So, and I think it was a very, very good presentation. It reflects the report.